And I'm trucking on, I'm trucking on. Well, I'll move her on down the line. Another time will do me fine. I'm trucking on.
Howdy, friends, and welcome to Trucking On. I'm your host, Ward Richmond. I really appreciate you tuning in today, and I hope you enjoy the show. What's up, y'all? Welcome back. I'm pumped to be with you here today and introduce you, if you've never met him, to my good friend, Sherman Barnes. And I'm just full of gratitude for this conversation I got to have with him and so excited to share it with you. Sherman's been a good friend of mine for several years. We met, I think, through LinkedIn. It's the way you meet people now on social media. And we're both in the logistics business in some form or fashion. And we just got together for lunch one day and then, of course, realized we have more in common than I have with most people alive. So hope you enjoy this conversation and get to know the man, Sherman Barnes. Let's go. Sherman Barnes, what's happening, my man?
What's going on, man?
So glad you're here today.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the invite. It's been a while.
Welcome to Trucking On.
Absolutely. I'm really excited. I saw your LinkedIn post about it. It's a nice kickoff. Heard your first episode.
Today is that we're recording this is the day, January 10th, that we released the first episode. So that's pretty cool. I recorded the first episode back like the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So that's when we first recorded it. And today finally, you know, figured out everything that's required after the recording part to go get a podcast up and running. So it's exciting to have it live. And now you're here with me to celebrate.
Yep. Congratulations, man. It's awesome. Excited.
I had we'd been texting really, it seems like the last 6 months to get together one way or another, like lunch or getting kids together or whatever. And dude, it's just been nuts, like with everything with travel and business. But I had a note to reach out to you yesterday and we're going to figure out something to do. And then I said, why don't you just come over tomorrow and we'll do the podcast. And here you are.
So, kill two birds with one stone.
Love it. So let's get into this. I want to find out about Sherman Barnes, and I already know a lot, but I want other people to hear, and then I know I'm going to uncover some things that I don't know about yet. But I know you and I are about the same age. You're
43.
44. We have so much in common whenever we talk from music, our passions about music, and then the supply chain and logistics industry, of course, and just so much that I always enjoy our time together and glad we get to record this. It'll be on the interwebs forever.
Let's do it.
Okay. So tell us about yourself. I want to start really focusing on age 12 to 22, because I know for me that shaped a lot of my life, like what happened during that time. And I think it turns you into this person that that I think drives you maybe through maybe the whole rest of your life, unless you just need to make a quick 180. But tell me about those years. I think they're important years of life, and how you grew up and anything, you know, like your passions that you had, what did you learn? And then like anything else that may have happened, trauma and otherwise, that may have shaped you.
Yep. So originally I'm from Jackson, Mississippi. So I was, you know, born and raised in Jackson, Mississippi. I am African-American. I know this is an audio. And so I grew up in an area that I would say is lower middle class to, you know, some may say that it's the hood. I was around it. So, but the blessing that I did have is that my father was in my life. So I grew up in an area where most of the dads weren't there, but I did have my father there, which I felt gave me a tremendous advantage. I saw him going to work, working hard, working two or three jobs. Saw him get laid off a little bit. So I definitely know that that influenced me. I can get into that a little bit later, but that's why I always have multiple streams of income, because I saw my father work his tail off from my perspective and then get laid off. He actually, funny enough, was in the shipping and receiving. He was a shipping and receiving manager his entire life, working in warehousing. So I don't know if I ever shared that with you.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, so at different companies, Levi's, Minack, Yates, names that may not necessarily mean anything anymore. But so during the summer times as well, when I was 15 or 16, I get a chance to work in a warehouse, learned how to drive a forklift, how to pick orders, how to do all of those things. I didn't intend to get into the business, but I'm in the family business.
But you have a forklift license now.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I think that is one thing that definitely shaped me. Another thing that shaped me is that I'll be 44 in March. So I'm a Pisces. So okay. Very intuitive person. I can read energy really well, read people really well. But I think that growing up where I did in an area of so much trauma, I got picked on a lot in school, like a ton. For some reason, I overthought it, so I didn't stand up for myself perhaps like I should have. Looking back at it now, like, you know, kids' dads on crack cocaine or kids' dads not in the picture or moms messing with different guys, they're traumatized and I'm happy-go-lucky and whistling Dixie and like, dude, what's up with him? So I was an easy target, but I didn't realize that at the time. And so that was definitely a trauma I feel that affected me in a negative way. And so I started off as a good kid, but eventually I started getting into partying pretty hard, you know, doing a bit of drugs here and there. You know, I'm a type A personality. So either if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it to the fullest extent. And that's something that got me into a bit of trouble over time, because by the time I went to college, my first time in college, I flunked out. So I got into trouble with...
Where did you go to college?
Like, University of Southern Mississippi.
Okay.
In Hattiesburg, Mississippi. So it's where Brett Favre went. So I went there and
Let's go back a little bit. Okay. Like, how wild were you in high school? Did you you were going obviously to enough classes to get you into college, mm-hmm. so you weren't like totally off the map crazy or anything, but you were just having some fun.
Actually, in high school, I was a good kid. My grades, I always barely skated by. It was due to lack of effort and not paying attention.
Same.
It wasn't. it was for that purpose. So I did get into, to backtrack a little bit, another thing that'll probably be interesting to listeners is that since I did grow up in the hood, I grew up like my entire elementary was all black. The church I went to was all black. My middle school was all black and all of that. And so when I had an opportunity in the 11th grade to go to a school that was mixed, I got into a gifted arts program, which I probably never told you.
No.
So I was really good at photography, at painting and drawing. And so I tried out for it and I got into a different school, and that school was mixed. So that was the first time that I ever went to school with people that didn't look, you know, exactly like me.
Yeah.
And it was really cool.
And with a lot of creatives too.
A lot more opportunity. And it really did, you know, it really did open up my mind. One of my close friends that was from the hood like I was, he got into theater arts first, and that's how I found out about this school. And so I did go there. And even when I went there, I wasn't getting in trouble. I was barely skating by, but I wasn't getting in trouble. But I think that when I hit my 18th birthday and graduated and it was time to go to college, the best way I know to say it is that I didn't feel fear anymore from being picked on in the past. And so when I went to college, I went, okay, I'm going to kind of go be hardcore, you know, show all the guys. I mean,
it's the opportunity to become a new person, right?
No
doubt. And, you know, we've discussed it. I got picked on in middle school really bad because I'm a white man. But I went to JL Long Middle School, and I mean, I think it was like probably 15% white people there.
Wow.
There was a big Hispanic population at the school, like I think probably like 70%, and then another 10 or 15% black people.
Yep.
But I mean, I got bullied because I was upper middle class going to public school where I mean, I was technically in that little bubble, a minority.
Yep,
and yep. I was awkward and I hadn't grown. I'm also now like 6'4", 220 pounds. I like grew into a pretty large man. But back then I was just like lanky and I hadn't grown into my size yet. I was a very happy-go-lucky. And this is why, and I know we've talked about this before, but man, you're like that and you're going there with such innocence and white eyes and then you're low-hanging fruit when you're guys like we were and you like walk into a middle school that's kind of, that's like, you know, and it's rough.
Yeah.
And there's gangs that are forming. Mm-hmm. There are people like getting jumped into gangs at outside of lunch. I actually hired I paid this black guy named Frank, seventh grade. I'd give him half my lunch money every day for him to be my bodyguard, protect me from like the Mexican gangbangers
wow.
that were like coming after me.
Wow.
And then Frank transferred and it was all over.
You were screwed.
So I suffered. And then thankfully I started. You know, you get out of middle school. Middle school is the worst because these guys that were there, they're like 16 years old and they're getting held back and they never got out of middle school. So they have beards.
Yeah.
And when you got to high school, all those guys basically dropped out and they went into the trade full time of being in the gang and doing whatever. And then it chilled out at Woodrow. And then the combination of like just growing into my, you know, into being a big dude and lifting weights and playing football, which I mean, I was driven to go do that to, you know, to create this new identity.
Yeah,
like
protect
you're saying.
Yourself. Yep.
Well, yeah. I mean, those things, like I think impact you so much because you build up a little bit of an armor around yourself and you want to just try to morph into somebody that's not going to get attacked.
Right.
And
right. 100%. And also I feel that those experiences of being able to read a room, that intuition was developed through being able to read the room and knowing, you know what, something's going on over here. Let me go over here so I won't get picked on. Or, hey, that's a dangerous situation. Let me go over there, go over here and do something else. Like learning to read the room and the vibe in a room has definitely helped me in my career for sure and given me an edge.
Yeah. Well, so you got into college and you're this new man. That's going to be hard partying Sherman.
Yep.
Getting after it. Mm-hmm. And so let's get back
now I'm
to
popular,
it.
Right? You know, I'm that guy.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm turning up. I'm in college.
We're the same.
So, you know, all of the skills I learned for what not to do is, I just packaged it into this persona and had a great time in college. Unfortunately, I didn't do my work. So I actually flunked out after year two. I think I made it to sophomore year, maybe Q2 of the sophomore year or whatnot. And I didn't study. I didn't do anything I was supposed to do. I actually was majoring in being a dentist because I heard dentists made a lot of money, which, you know, I always knew that I wanted to have, but that's not a reason to choose an occupation just because you heard dentists make a lot of money.
I was always told that dentists have a high suicide rate. I should have been there for you.
I never heard that one. So I went for that and college was good. I got to know a lot of different people. So University of Southern Mississippi is a mixed college as well, just for perspective. And so I had an opportunity to, again, get to know different types of people from different walks of life, get insights into their lives and skills. And there, I think I honed in on how to be a bit more multicultural in my communication and like learning out what's the Princess Bride. You know, I knew what, you know, New Jack City was, but what's the Princess Bride? Or what's, it sounds silly.
Both great movies.
Both great movies from completely unique perspectives, you know.
Yeah.
But learning how to understand, you know, what's a joke like in this community versus a joke in this community and how to make both laugh. And I learned those things, I feel like, not only in my last 2 years in high school, but also going to University of Southern Mississippi. But actually, I flunked out partying too hard. And what I did was I went back home for a while and started working with my dad on the docks. And that was a life changer because I saw people who were working two or three jobs out of necessity. So I'll give you an example. There was an older woman, single woman, raising four kids. And she would work with us from, you know, we'll say from 1 p.m. until 8 p.m.
A shift, basically.
A shift. But she had already worked in the morning as a lunch lady, she said, at a cafeteria. And then she'd also go to a third job on the weekends, like out of pure necessity. And what I saw was that I knew that I had a lot more opportunity before me than to do that for the rest of my life. I knew that if I stayed in that space, that my opportunities would be limited and that I had been given too many gifts to not execute on them. And so I did that for about a year. And then I went back to college to Jackson State, which is funny. Now everybody knows what it is because Coach Prime. Mm-hmm. But I went to Jackson State and, killed it with the grades because by then I knew I wanted to do
it. You're ready.
Yeah, I was ready. I was ready. So I went into majored in marketing. I was involved in, I went overseas for a student program. I worked for the College of Business part-time. Like, I really did take advantage of the
That's
opportunity.
That's amazing.
It was a complete 360. Yeah. It really was. And I learned a ton. Funny enough, Jackson State gets recruited a lot because we have a partnership with Union Pacific. A lot of alumni go there. Went to Jackson State, and so they come to recruit. And I actually went to the UP to interview my senior year. I ended up not getting the job, but it was a good experience. And so I feel like in my life, it was always hovering around supply chain, logistics, and transportation. I wouldn't have known it really back then, but just looking at the totality of it now.
Working in a warehouse, driving a forklift, your first job interviews with UP.
Yeah. That was it was written in stone. So Jackson State definitely was a great school, great opportunity, but it was also because I was focused and I was able to utilize a lot of the opportunities that were presented to me by going to college. I could have done that at USM, but I wasn't focused. I didn't know what I wanted to do.
What did you do outside of studying in that, or what were your passions? Did you play sports at all, or were you doing your art still through college?
So that's a good question. This is a good interview. You're asking some good questions here. So what got me through everything was music. Yeah. So I'm an artist. What I didn't mention is that, so I grew up in church pretty heavily, and my whole family is musicians on both sides. Southern Baptist.
Okay.
From Mississippi.
Yeah.
So Southern Baptist, evangelical.
Great music.
Yeah. So everybody, bass, guitars and whatnot. So my dad was like minister of music. Both of my sisters, like everybody knows how to sing and play instruments, including myself. I grew up doing hip hop. I didn't know how to sing, but I preferred doing hip hop, and I can get into that. Yeah, and I started producing. So like with an MP. Back then it was an Insonic EPS, and then graduated to SP1200, and then MPC 2000 is the devices that I was using. And so when I saw your picture over there with the vinyl, I have like 1,000 like pieces of vinyl at my home. I used to basically take a piece of vinyl, which is an album for those that may not know, and you put it on the turntable, and I would sample and cut something up and then make it into a beat. And I was really good at it. And so that's what got me through college from an artistic perspective. I would still do photography a little bit, but music, a huge part of my life was music. Always has been, always will be.
I've never done production work like that, but I can only imagine just the flow state. I mean, I have to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Writing a song is that's
same,
what it does.
Same thing. Yep.
For me, it's writing a song. So I get my guitar and I'll sit there and just make up lyrics, melodies. But what you're doing, it's the same thing. And you get in this flow state where time speeds up, right? Like 6 hours can go by.
I'm like,
working
what?
On something and it feels like 30 minutes.
Yes.
And that's...
It's
awesome.
Magic. Let's be honest.
That
it's
is
magic, man.
Awesome.
Yeah.
When you're like that. And it's still when I get into doing that, man, it's such a magical feeling. Writing's like that. Doing this podcast this is my sixth episode. But I love doing this and it's fun. And it gets your mind. I think when you're doing things like that or anything creative at all, your mind stops thinking about all the other shit going on in your monkey brain.
Yeah.
It's like, what should I do here? What does this person think about me? Or what's up next? Or what do I have to do tomorrow morning? Like when you're in that state, it's just pure magic.
And what's interesting, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm trying to teach that to my kids. My kids are smart, but they're thinking too much. And I'm trying to teach them how to get out of that, get into that into that zone, because I'm sure you can relate. I've done it musically, artistically, but even with your work, if you think of your work as art, you can zone in on certain aspects of it and really create a masterpiece in a unique way. You know, I know it sounds kind of weird or whatnot, and you know, one is like more scientific and whatnot, and it's not all art, but it's, to me, you know, it's a mix of science and art. You definitely need the analytical side of it, but you also need that creative human element to it, because we are conducting business with humans. We're not conducting business with machines. And so I view it as the same thing.
I was told this quote, and it's about what is a good job. And a good job is something that allows you, like provides you with novelty, so you're not doing the same thing over and over. Two, the opportunity to create art. And three, the opportunity to help others. And if you're doing those three things, that's a good job.
That's true.
And if Jose is listening, who helps me with the show notes here, we've got to go find who said that quote and put him in the show notes and give him credit. But man, I started thinking about that when I heard it, and doing, obviously music is art. But when I think about commercial real estate and the things that I do, whether it is marketing or even doing something that could be considered mundane, like drafting an RFP, if you think of it as art, it's art.
Yep.
Like, and if I treat my RFPs, if I think of a financial analysis as art, and I say, I want to do a financial analysis that is going to show us this, this, and this, and this, and we've never done it this way before. And then I am working with my team, and I've got James on my team, who's like an Excel wizard, and James can go take my thoughts and put it to fruition in the spreadsheet and then deliver this data in a synthesized format. And you get excited about it like it's art,
yep,
which I do, thankfully. It's art.
Yep.
And just the same as writing a song.
I 100% agree. I 100% agree. Yep.
We're fist bumping, people. Oh yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's so important. And if you're, a lot of times you might be miserable in your job, but if you start thinking of your job like art, your job might seem a little cooler.
Yes.
You just got to change your mindset.
Yes.
If you're thinking, gosh, I have to do this all day, like my supervisor is such a pain in the ass, like make it a game to make your supervisor love you. And then that becomes this whole new thing.
I love that you said that. So that's a great segue into a story.
Yeah, let's go.
So my first job out of college, so I leave Mississippi because it's just not, my family's there. I love it. It's a great town, but it's just not a lot of opportunity for a young man to make a name for himself. So I had $350. My best friend said I could sleep on his couch. And the first job I landed happened to be C.H. Robinson. So it was in the industry. I had other job interviews set up. I didn't choose transportation. It chose me.
Yeah.
And within 2 weeks, I had a job. Within 2 months, I had my own place. And my point in bringing that up is that when I first started at Robinson, you know, they throw you in, you know, sink or swim. Yeah, live or die. You know, it's a great training program.
It's like a boiler room.
Boiler room, man. It's a boiler room. And either you're going to make it or not. And cold calling, ton of cold calling, dealing with carriers, negotiation, all of those types of things. Like, you're in the heat of it and you really learn. It's almost like the New York Stock Exchange, but for freight, because people, you know, may hop up and start yelling out loud about a load, or if you missed a pickup, like, you know, hey, Sherman, where's my load? You know, and with a little, expletives added to it or whatnot in front of everybody. But it was cool though. It was like a competitive environment, and I started to thrive in it. And to go back to what you said in terms of boredom, like when we would be done for the day, essentially, like let's say it's a slower day and all of the loads have been covered, I would start to get bored. And so to make it a game, you mentioned making it a game and to create a flair, I started to go into the system and figure out, okay, who are all of the old customers that we used to do business with in the past year that haven't done business with us anymore? And I created a call strip, and I started calling those guys, and I started landing customers like water. Yeah. Like, people didn't know how I did it, but I'm a creative person. So if you put something in front of me, I'm going to do it in a creative way. And one thing to know about me too is that sometimes it may take me a minute for things to, for one thing that I observed was that sometimes for me to catch on to things, it took a little bit longer than a normal person with some stuff. But once I learn it, I'm going to run circles around you because I'm going to understand it at a deeper level than you will.
Yeah.
You understand? Like, I'm going to understand it in a way that I can't even really fully explain it to you. And so the things that I'm able to do, whether at a company or with a client or whatever, it's just going to be in a unique way because I'm understanding things I know Elon Musk, he says first principles. I understand it at a first principles level. And so because of that, I'm able to do things that other people, you know, wouldn't be able to do. I'm not saying I'm the smartest man in the world, but I think different and I know it and I own it now.
Yeah. Love that. So what we're getting into now is what happened age 22 to current, which is this back half of your life. And we have to touch on your beautiful family.
Yeah. And
like, but what led to that, you know, and how many kids do you have?
Six.
Six children.
Six children. Four boys, two girls.
I was just at the airport on Friday coming home. We went skiing with my kids.
Nice.
I have two kids. And there was a family in front of us who almost made me miss my flight. We had seven kids.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And he's flying with seven kids. And you see them. And I mean, they had the luggage too. They had like a max out giant bags for every seven of those kids.
Taylor, Drew Fitzgerald, you crazy, right?
I thought I was gonna miss the flight. That's the only reason I cared because they're taking forever to get checked. They had like 30 bags or something. And anyway, but I fist bumped the dad. I'm like, bro,
kudos.
Respect.
Yeah.
So now I wanna hear, you know, how I know you're Southern Baptist and all,
uh-huh.
Not Catholic, but
nope.
I want to hear
close enough, right?
Yeah, I want to hear about you know, C.H. Robinson, how that went, and then kind of we're going to get into business a little bit later, but you can tell
the personal
trajectory.
Side of, okay.
But I want to hear personal, and then you know, if you want to mention where business took you, but yeah, I want to hear you know what's going on the personal side.
Yeah, so I graduated from college, moved as I mentioned to Atlanta. And I met my now wife. I met her my first 7 months there.
Yeah.
She's from Michigan.
You're at CH.
I'm at CH at the time.
Yeah.
I'm at CH at the time. And I met her, and we were married pretty quickly.
How'd you meet her?
At a bar. Okay. I met her at a bar. I approached her, funny enough. I didn't think she was serious, and so I erased her number out of my phone. And then she called me back finally. And then I was like, who is this? And I didn't know that was her pet peeve. And she said, what do you mean? Who is this? You know who this is? I'm like, no. And she mentioned, and she said who she was. I'm like, oh, I thought you were, full of crap. I erased your number out of my phone. And the rest was history.
Yeah, love it.
So we got to know each other and that was cool. I had two kids pretty quickly. I had my first two sons, like very quickly into the marriage. And I'm at CH Robinson, working, learning the business still. And I actually had an opportunity to leave there and start a Landstar agency. I'm sure you've heard of Landstar.
Yeah.
It's kind of, yes, 100%. So I started the Landstar agency with a friend of mine who was at CH Robinson as well. He's now a senior VP at another company. I'll get into that later.
So I think of CH Robinson as freight brokerage, basically.
Yeah.
But they've gotten into the warehousing space as well.
Yeah.
But they probably had very little warehousing back then, I would imagine.
This was I was there from 05 to 09. So my office primarily, we did full truckload, flat, like it was all traditional freight brokerage. But there was a produce, non-asset.
Yeah.
A little bit later, they started buying boxes. Intermodal boxes here or there. They were doing a bit of produce. They were doing some international air and ocean. But that was a little bit, they were just kind of getting into it, at least from my perspective, from what I saw working there. But all of those additional services or whatnot came a little bit later. I was gone in April of 2009.
And then, so 4 years.
Mm-hmm, four years.
Went to Landstar.
You know, after my first job out of college, I went to 100% commission, started my own company, kind of a deal with my friend. And this was in 09, horrible time to do it. I mean, this was during a downturn.
I remember.
Like, super challenging. Like, beyond, like, that was the most difficult time that I had had in the industry, even to date. And we did well, but it wasn't enough to support our families at the time. And so I had to step away from it about a year later. And
you had two kids at that point?
I had two kids with one on the way.
Okay.
Two kids with one on the way.
One on the way is coming. And you're like, I got to go.
Yeah, this isn't going to be enough.
Find another gig.
Yeah. I learned a lot from that not working out. I won't say it's a failure. It just didn't earn the income I needed at the time. And I just had the presence of mind to say, hey, this probably isn't a good time to do this, and let me, go veer and do something else. But I did learn a lot. I did learn a lot from it. I learned a lot from it.
Yeah. What would be the number one thing you learned?
I felt that at the time, and it's funny, I'm coaching somebody on this right now. The person that I started the business with, I was probably too dependent upon that person. Thinking that, man, if I can start a company with this person, then it's going to work.
I'll be fine.
And I wasn't as dependent upon myself as I should have been.
Yeah.
And this isn't so much of what I would have done different as it is just the internal, what I've learned from it is that, no one's coming to save you.
Right.
Like it's up to you. You have to believe in yourself and that you are capable in principle of stepping up to life challenges, whatever they may be. And I learned that through that situation, that we both were trying to figure it out. He didn't know any more than I knew or whatnot, right? Like in that moment, so I do a lot of reading. And sometimes we try to replicate what another successful person did in 1982 real estate or in, 1935 real estate. But that world is gone. Mm-hmm. Like it no longer exists. Some of the tax, things that may be different. Some of the things they may have done then are illegal now. You have to figure out how Ward Richmond, how Sherman Barnes is going to execute in commercial real estate in 2023.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And that means you got to be present and beyond. So that means you have to be, yes, understand the past, understand historically what's happened, but I got to be present in the now. And looking towards the future to see how am I going to be successful this year. I mean, some things that you did in 2022 or I did in 2022, they aren't going to work in 2023. No. They're not going to work in 2024. So it requires a presence of mind, you know what I mean? And being present to what's going on around you and not trying to replicate everything that people did. We can learn from the past. We can use some of those skill sets for sure. And I learned from working with him. But that's the biggest thing I learned, that no one's coming to save you, and just being present and focusing on what you can do to affect the change and having that confidence in yourself.
Like, create value. Right?
Yeah.
At the end
of
the day, it's like Tony Robbins really drilled this into my head when I went to a bunch of his conferences back in 17, 18.
Oh, wow.
And he said this thing, create more value than anyone expects. And he said to make that my mantra and write it down and say it 10 times a day. And if I ever have anxiety about work or money or whatever. And then when you say that, what it does is it programs you to start thinking about new, improved ways to create value. Mm. And then his theory is basically the laws of reciprocity or whatever. And it's like, if you create value, you will receive.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Facts.
But if you sit around and go partner up with a rainmaker and think that you're going to get half of what the rainmaker makes,
uh-huh,
and not do anything, that rainmaker will...
Yep.
Soon realize it's not working out or whatever. But, and then when you're just focused on creating value, then life again becomes simple. It's turning it into this game.
100%. 100%.
Let's just think of something new to do today. And if I'm thinking about that, then I'm not thinking about scarcity or I'm not thinking about what sucks or what my problems are right now.
Yeah. When you get in that space, you're not going to create value. Now, funny enough, we getting into some similarities. So you're getting all my good stuff. So when I was in high school, I would go to the library. I told you I'm a reader, but I'm also an audio visual learner too.
Yeah.
And I went to this old section. I have a habit of going places and looking at stuff that's weird that other people would. I know I ask questions other people don't ask. I'm really weird. And so I went to this old section. I went to this old section in the library, and they had these cassette tapes, and they were it would be the size of a yearbook. It would be 8 cassette tapes.
Yeah.
And I found Earl Nightingale. I didn't know who he was. Nobody in my family listened to those kinds of things at all. I found Earl Nightingale, Lead the Field, and that was a part start of my journey. So I listened to that.
Deepak
Chopra. I'm in high school, bro.
Oh,
like, I mean, I'm listening really more high school, going into college era.
Yeah.
I wasn't practicing it yet, but I remember working at a print shop and I was listening to an audiobook. It was Deepak Chopra. And the manager there said, man, you know, what are you listening to this stuff for? Like, what does somebody know about your life, man? You know, what does he know about your life? And I heard him, but I was like, he got some really deep thoughts here for me to think about, you know? And so I got into that. So like Jim Rohn, I'm a huge Jim Rohn
fan. That's Tony Robbins' mentor.
Yeah. I had Tony Robbins stuff. Like I got deep into that. And that helped me with my mindset. And your mindset is really important. You know, as you mentioned, like if you're all negative or, well, I'm going to depend on Ward to come up, or I'm going to, you know, if I just connect with this person, then this is going to be it or whatever. Like you have to become empowered yourself. So, you know, one of my favorite books that I've read was on self-esteem, and I forget his name. I have a huge book collection, but just about I think it's the 6 pillars of self-esteem. And that's where I got the ideology of no one's coming to save you.
Yeah.
Like no one's coming to make your life better for you. Like none of that. And so I think that listening to those audiobooks during that season of my life was another reason why I am the way that I am.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get trucking on here. And you left Landstar. You have your third kid on the way. You're in Atlanta still.
Yep.
And what happened next?
So I have an opportunity to go to UPS. So prior to, I'm doing all domestic, full truckload, flatbed, you know, a little bit of LTL, all domestic, like freight brokerage. So I go to UPS and I'm doing, you know, I'm a learner, as I mentioned earlier. And so I wanted to learn international shipping. So there I went to their supply chain solutions division, which handles air, ocean, and custom brokerage, a little bit of warehousing. So I got thrown into that. It was awesome. I learned a ton there too. Met some really talented people. I feel like this isn't a derogatory statement at all. C.H. Robinson is a branch model built like the New York Stock Exchange, but without the suits. And so it's really like aggressive, like gung-ho, push it. UPS is where I learned my polish. Now we're in a weird world now that we can talk about later. I ended up getting, you know, my tats on my hand and stuff now, but that's where I learned to, during that era, you know, to be clean shaven, how to tie a proper tie.
UPS can't control their employees anymore.
I had to learn, you know, how to control perception, how to have executive presence, like all these things, all good stuff. You know, some of it, I think we've gone past that, especially in a post-COVID world, we're past that. But at the time, and even a little bit now, depending on who I'm meeting with, as I told you, I'm intuitive and I know like how old is this person, where are they from. I can kind of guess how to dress depending on what's going on. But from them, I learned to polish. I learned how to think more strategically. I dealt with some higher level executives there that I was able to develop some relationships with and soak up from them. A lot of what I learn is not so much what people teach me, it's just being around and observing how they deal with sales calls, objections, how they deal with meetings.
Yeah.
You know, all of these subtle things. And so from there, you know, I feel that I learned that. And it also opened me up to dealing with people overseas. You know, at the time you had to have a cell phone that could call to China or India or whatnot. But that plays a part into why I'm doing so much business overseas now. Is because I got used to dealing with people overseas. And now with WhatsApp and, you know, Upwork and, you know, Fiverr or, you know, all of these different things that's out there now. Telegram, I can wire money anywhere. Like I'm wiring money all over the place. So that's what I learned from UPS from my perspective.
You know what I love about UPS culture, and this really goes for the whole supply chain and logistics sector, but UPS really proves this up a lot, is the truck drivers become the executives.
Yep.
And a lot of folks work their way up from literally driving a delivery truck or working in a warehouse to becoming president of a whole division.
That is true.
And I've met several people that are like that. And I think that's super cool about this business. Yep. And I think that gives people a major leg up to be in a management role at a logistics company when you've done it and you understand, because there's so many moving pieces in a warehouse and in the supply chain. And when you've actually been there and been driving it around, it's like you have that, you have a level of empathy that's going to far exceed some like grad school student that 100%. Just came in to be an executive.
That's 100%.
And that's never worked in a warehouse. So major respect to UPS and all great companies that you've worked for. And then you're at UPS, your family's growing. And then is that when you moved to Wisconsin?
Yeah. So I'm at UPS and I get an opportunity for Schneider. I was a director of sales for them for about 10 months in Atlanta. And then I got an opportunity to become a vice president of sales. But I had to move to Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So I moved to Green Bay, Wisconsin with four kids at this time.
Which professional football team do you root for?
It's complicated because I'm from Mississippi, and most people in Mississippi either are Dallas Cowboy fans or New Orleans Saints fans. But I got to be honest, when I moved to Green Bay, you got to keep – it's an NFL team smack dab in an area with like 150,000 people. It grows on you. Like, you get to know Packer players.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah. I became a Packer fan from being there. They're fervent fans, man. And I get why. And the community owns the team.
Yeah.
You know, when it snows, it's an open top.
I'd love to go watch a game.
Yeah, you got to go. Yeah, you got to go. It's great.
I'm Dallas Cowboys for life.
Yeah.
Obviously, but.
Funny enough, the Dallas Cowboys and I can build a business case that the Dallas Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers are the same team. You never know which team's going to show up on a Sunday.
True that. And I love Dak and I love Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, yeah. Both great quarterbacs.
Great,
yep.
Great dudes too.
McCarthy was our coach at Green Bay.
Yeah, true. Okay, so family keeps growing. Yep. You're in Green Bay, but you love the Packers, but you didn't last that long in Green Bay, did you?
I was there about four and a half years.
Gosh, it seems so, because that's when I met you.
Yeah.
When you were up there and in transitioning.
Mm-hmm. I met you in Chicago. You were speaking in Chicago at an event, and that's when I first met you. Yep.
At Armstrong, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
That's Armstrong. A great conference.
Great
Armstrong
conference.
3PL conference.
Yes, great conference.
Right on. I've met so many great people there. The guys from Traffics I met there.
You know wow. Them? Yeah, yeah.
Great crew. Yep. Doc Snow.
Yep.
He's the man. I'm going to get him on here for sure.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, yeah. So now, family's still growing. Do you want to talk on that? Like, what's it like having six children? I feel like pressure.
Inquiring minds want to know.
I have two kids and an ex-wife that are in my life, and they drive me every day. So I can't imagine. And I tell my teammates two of my teammates have children, two of them don't, and two that don't, I just say, have a kid and watch your income double. That's what happened to me.
That's true, dude. That's true.
It puts the pedal to the metal. You have someone else to care about that's greater than yourself.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
So I can only imagine six kids, and I know what your work ethic is.
Yeah,
They've got to be there.
Oh, yeah.
Driving. You have a favorite kid?
All of my kids are my favorite kids.
Good answer.
But talking about kids, whatever you have is a lot. Like, when we had one kid, I was exhausted. It was a lot. And then when we had two, we were tired. Mm-hmm. We had three. So whatever you have, that's your vantage point. That's your perspective. Like, being a parent takes everything you have. And so from that perspective, we're all tired from raising kids or challenges to it. But having a lot of kids, I didn't know that we wanted to have a lot of kids. It just kind of happened. As you can probably tell by now, I'm a bit of a free spirit and I do things that are unexpected sometimes. And so every time we had a kid, it's like, are we done? And you're like, I don't know. You know? And then you have another one. But then when we had the six, it was like, no, we're done. Like, we both were like, we knew we were done.
This is it.
Because I'm the type of person that, I'm not like a religious person, but I'm a spiritual person. And I think that we're all on a path and, we're discovering that path. It's already kind of out there. And so I was supposed to have six kids. I was supposed to be in transportation. I was supposed to meet you. Like, we don't always know why we're doing things. I think we're on a path of discovery in life, personally.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm not sure everybody, has the pair to go for it. You know, I think they're, because people will approach me and say, hey, listen, and this isn't a value judgment, like one kid, two kids, 12, whatever it may be. But so I've met several older people come and say, man, you know, I wanted to have one more kid or two more, but I was too scared, you know?
Yeah.
And I made a decision early in life, not just in regards to kids, but in regards to entrepreneurship, whatever it may be. Like, that's why I quit C.H. Robinson and started my own. And that was my first job out of college. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I just went for it. That I was not going to make decisions based on fear. Like, I refuse to. Like, that's just I have basic principles. And I'm the type of person where if I find a truth, I'm going to try my best to adhere to that truth. And that spiritual truth to me is that I don't make decisions based on fear. Like, I refuse to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I refuse to do it. And so if I want to have six children, I'm going to have six. I'm going to be smart about it. I'm going to try to do the best. I'm going to work my tail. I know what that means. So I'm going to make an educated decision, but I'm not going to make a decision based on fear. Like, I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah. That's amazing. We've talked a lot about business. I knew that we'd get into a lot of supply chain stuff. My next question is just, you know, tell me what you're doing right now and why would I hire you? What differentiates you? And I'm going to tell you what I think from listening to you. It's like, I know one thing that differentiates you, like obviously you being Sherman, your work ethic and all of that goes without, you know, saying, but also you've worked for all these different great companies. And in doing kind of different things with amazing companies. So you're, in a sense, you've become a jack of all trades that knows all about these different sectors of the logistics business, which I think you're talking to somebody, you can go speak seven different languages in a sense.
Yep.
So that's pretty awesome. But tell us also, like, what's your main gig now? What are you doing and what differentiates you from the rest of the pack?
Okay, so I'll tell you. So I'm working...
Award-winning personality aside.
Yeah.
Everybody's picked up on that.
So I am still in the still in the transportation business. I work for a company called Trio Trucking. It's a small company. I went to a smaller company that's a bit more entrepreneurial. The founders have been in business for 40-something years. And so they hired me to help them get into larger accounts. But they've given me the autonomy to have my own business too. And that's what I was looking for. I'm done with the corporate ladder. I could have kept moving up, you know, senior VP, whatever. Like I said, my business partner from when I was at Landstar that I started with, he's a senior VP at one of, you know, a large competitor, like one of the larger companies. And I knew I could keep doing that, but I knew deep down, like I need freedom. I need breathing room. Like I want autonomy, you know, all these things. And so, you know, I went with a company called Trio Trucking. So we're doing full truckload and intermodal services strictly. So I got them into some really large retailers, into some really large accounts that they wanted to. So executing on that. And in the meantime, they do not do brokerage. And so I have my own brokerage and I'm in partnership with some guys in Eastern Europe. So I got a team. So I got a team in Eastern Europe, right? About 10 guys over there doing
your own business.
Yes. Yes. Cool. So that's what the Ask the Transporter kind of piece is.
Ask the Transporter.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm doing that and we're doing full truckload, you know, but it's brokerage, right? Like flatbed.
Ask the Transporter.com.
Yeah.
We'll put that in the show notes.
So I got to know that, but again, I learned that from at UPS. I got to know people overseas.
Yeah.
You know, and now you can transact business in the US, but via back office support overseas. So we've been doing really well with that. So they're in Eastern Europe and I got another guy in India. I got a couple of guys in Africa, you know, that are doing that. On top of that, I learned that, okay, outsourcing overseas in and of itself is a service offering. So I created Sales Hub 24/7. It's www.saleshub247.com.
That's a good one.
And so there I have a team in India and we offer outsourced, you know, back office support. So like one of our customers is a trucking company. Another one is a freight broker. Another one is a heavy equipment broker.
And they do sales calls?
So both. So with one of them, we have an energy company that we're co-calling customers to get them to switch over to this alternative energy sector, right? And home warranty. So that's
people
B2C.
In India calling
people Americans to get them to switch over home insurance for that customer, home, you know, energy for this customer, right?
Yeah.
So that's the B2C co-calling piece. On the BPO side of it, though, like I'm offering headcount. So like we just started up a trucking company and all we're going to do for him is set appointments, track and trace the loads. You know, I'm doing it for half of the price that he's paying someone to do it, right? So I got two sides of that business that's growing. So that's been, I've been doing that about a year.
But basically like doing sales stuff.
Yeah, primarily like I'm a sales animal. Yeah, yeah. Like sales and marketing. Yeah.
Do you give these people that work with you like scripts to call off of?
Yeah, we coach. I hire really skilled people. Like everybody's highly educated over there, hungry, aggressive. Like I interview, train.
That's really exciting.
Yeah. It's pretty fun stuff. So I have multiple, streams of income coming in. I'm doing, some real estate in Green Bay. You know, I made relationships up there. I just have a lot of capital to invest in, so I invest in different deals as they come about. So I'm definitely in a sweet space. Like I'm in a happy place where where I'm flexible. I can dress how I want. Like I got my Astor Transporter shirt on, but I got some Nikes on, Nikes and jeans. On. I had my facial hair was fully. I just cut it off.
Yeah,
because it was itching, right? But I had that out.
I'm getting my haircut today.
All right.
I have like the full. Post Christmas beard going on.
But I got to catch up with you here. But I told you I was going to start, man, getting like the tattoos on the forearms and stuff. I'm going to start. I got one design.
We've talked about this before. Yeah. I think this is interesting.
I was right there. I was right there at the time.
And I have lots of tattoos.
Yeah, it's dope.
I have two sleeves of tattoos, basically. And we talked about this years ago. And you're like, so I want to get a sleeve of tattoos. And thinking about how that might impact opportunities and whatnot you. And it's something that I did to help me fit in probably when I was playing music for a living.
I know what you mean.
It's because I thought it was
cool. It's cool. It's dope.
But also like the X factor was it will also make me feel cooler.
Right.
People will be like, that's cool. And I cared so much about what other people thought.
Hey, Coach Prime said, when you look good, you feel good. And when you feel good, you play good. And when you play good, they pay good. Hell
yeah. And then, when I first got into commercial real estate, I hid my tattoos. And I had short sleeves back then, like when I was 27. And went down like right to where I could wear a short sleeve shirt and it would cover them up. And then I just kind of kept getting them. The harder I worked and I would reward myself with tattoos to the point where it's like, okay, well, I'm at a level now where I know what I'm doing and I have incredible clients. They all know I have tattoos at this point because they become my friends. And then, you do something for 17 years and you do the same thing for 17 years, you realize nobody gives a fuck if you are really good at your job.
Correct.
And it took me so long to get over that. It's like so funny. And I know we've discussed it before. So, but man, I love them. And I didn't like sleeve myself out overnight. I've added on. I got my first tattoo when I was 21 years old to respect my dad who told me that he would disown me if I didn't wait until I was 21. And then when I was 21, he's like, I'll disown you if you get a tattoo. But I went ahead and I went with our original agreement on that.
Yeah.
And got one. I just didn't tell him about it until I was like 28. And I didn't tell him. He found me on like MySpace or something, but anyway, so that goes back to the next question. And we're coming up on an hour. So I'm fine to keep it rolling. We can go Joe Rogan style for 3 hours if you want to. But I feel like an hour is a good time frame. But what would you tell your younger self looking back now on everything that you've learned?
I would tell my younger self to go for it entrepreneurially earlier than I did.
Yeah.
Like that I didn't have to wait as long as I did.
Yeah. Love it. What would you say is your greatest failure?
My greatest failure, I said it wasn't a failure, but what felt like a failure to me was flunking out the first time. I felt like a huge idiot, like I embarrassed my family, and that really impacted me moving forward. It's like somebody took a slingshot. Before that, I was fine. I was chilling, just kicking it, happy go, you know, like I said. But once I did that and opened, you know, public and everybody knew I had flunked out of college and I'm back working at a warehouse with my dad, it's like somebody took a slingshot and pulled it back, man, and let it go. And I've been rolling ever since. So that was my biggest failure. But what it did was that it gave me drive in a way I never had. Now, I had to tweak that drive and make sure it's coming from a pure place. I wanted to be I wanted to burn clean so that it's renewable, if that makes sense, so I can keep going for you know, for like years and years to come. So, because if it's only about proving people wrong or only about proving my dad wrong or whatever, that, you know, it can't come, it can start off from a toxic place a little bit, but at some point it's got to, you know, you got to clean those fumes up, if that makes, nobody get too weird with that, but it's got to come from a pure place and from a place of joy than from a place of anger. You know what I mean?
100%.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay, we're doing rapid fire questions here. What is your morning ritual? Do you have one?
I do. My morning ritual is to stay in the bed, you know, and find out all of the things that I'm thankful for. Just fire out, like think about it, like I pray.
You say it in your head?
Yes.
Silently?
Yes.
Okay.
I do that before I get up. Like all of the things I'm thankful for.
Gratitude practice?
Yeah. Yeah, like because that. I want to, being driven as you are, as we are, right? I want to practice thankfulness, you know, come from a place of gratitude.
Dude, I tell you, we're so much the same. Look at this.
Oh, I journal too, yeah.
I journal. Like, number five thing I journal every day, first thing when I wake up is, like, gratitude. Like, what do I have gratitude for? And write that down. And that's how I finish my journaling every morning. And highly recommend that. I didn't start doing that till last year consistently. And I've done it I started on April 7th. I remember the day specifically. And I've done it, I've covered, I would say, like 95% of days since then.
Wow.
And man, that's
it makes a difference, man.
It's an amazing thing. So you do your gratitude prayer and then you get up and get going.
I hop up and get going.
Yeah.
I have a lot of energy, man. Yeah, it's just not.
How soon do the kids? Do you wake up before the kids? Or I mean,
my wife wakes up before the kids. That's her ritual. Is that she beats me up and everybody up.
Yeah.
And so while she's first getting them going, I'm in the room alone, you know, doing my thing, and then I'll come out and help as best I can.
When I talk about my morning ritual, and I do a solo cast in episode 2, I talk about all of these questions, but I ask them to myself. Mm-hmm. And I have this very extensive morning ritual, which is very easy to do. I have my kids 3 times a week. And six kiddos, but that's just impressive to take that time, and so important, man. What's your favorite hotel or place to travel, either way?
Believe it or not, so I have 6 kids. So let me answer that by saying I have 6 kids. So we don't fly everywhere. We like to drive. And during 2020, we discovered Airbnbs as a family. I love Airbnbs.
Yeah,
I got 6 kids. Amazing. We get a nice, you know, a good size home. I'm able to barbecue. I buy groceries. So it's like your home. The kids can run around versus being in a hotel. So I don't have a favorite hotel. Like,
do you have a favorite Airbnb?
The dopest one I went to, like, so we enjoy every, do not judge me. Do not judge me.
I don't judge.
This isn't Destin, Florida. We have enjoyed going to a place called Surfside Beach, Texas, man, south of Houston.
Like,
we enjoy going. It's slower. It's a slower pace. Some people are going to be like, Surfside Beach, but, you know, it's great. It's very relaxing. The houses are spread out. We really enjoy it. And at the end of every summer, right a week or so before school, we go every summer and get the same Airbnb. It's been great.
Love it. Love it. What's your favorite restaurant?
I love to eat. Unfortunately, I'm in the process of losing weight now. My favorite restaurant I live in Frisco, is Three Forks. Their steaks are like...
solid.
Yeah, they got solid steaks, man. So I like that place.
What's a book worth talking about and why?
The Rise and Fall of Empires by Ray Dalio.
That just came out.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I bought that because you posted about it on LinkedIn.
It's incredible.
I haven't read it yet.
It's going to put a lot of stuff in
principles.
Principles was dope. Principles, I listen to his talks, and so I read a ton, man. I take in a lot of podcasts, and like that's just how I am. But that's a really good book.
Very cool. We'll put that in the show notes, and I need to go read it because I have it sitting here. Do you have a favorite quote or a quote you'd like to share?
Yeah. Jim Rohn.
Yeah.
Don't wish things were easier. Wish you were better. Don't wish for less problems. Wish for more skills. That's one of my favorites.
I love that. Love it. Music, so important to both of us. And I got to play one song on the first episode, but I haven't really, there's so much red tape and like getting to play a song on a podcast and you get it ripped. But what I'm going to do, just tell us what song you'd like to share with the audience, and I'll put in a link to Spotify and Apple iTunes in the show notes, and then they can go listen to it. But what song do you want to share and why?
I love Cool in the Gang, Summertime.
Oh yeah.
I love Cool in the Gang, Summertime. In Mississippi, in the South period, barbecuing around family, listening to old vinyl, it brings me joy. My wife's always surprised how often I barbecue because I'm probably tired from work or whatever, but it brings me joy to do it. And so I enjoy doing that. And so that just reminds me like a sunny day, you know, I'm barbecuing, you know, I don't drink alcohol.
Charcoal? Are you a charcoal guy?
Yeah. And charcoal, throw the wood in to smoke it. Yeah. That's how I grew up. And that brings me joy, man. I do things that make me happy.
Yes. Is there a charity or cause that you donate money or time to that you'd like to discuss?
Yeah. So I'm giving to Jackson State. I give back to them. They did a lot for me. I give to my church. And I actually, believe it or not, I try to help family out. I'm very blessed. It can't be, you know, crazy situations, but my young nieces and nephews that are finishing college or trying to go to college, I try to help out when I can. Like if they need to get a card, like, hey, I'll match you this or whatever. I always incentivize stuff. So I don't just give, but you know, if you have an uncle,
put in the work. I'll help you.
I will help you in your efforts.
Yeah.
But I will not, you know, pay a freeloader.
I think my dad had me do that in high school for buying my first car, which I bought from him. But it's like he tripled whatever I earned.
That's good. Yep.
Something like that.
It's helpful.
And so not to go throw out the triple if you're not doing that much, but hopefully not too many of your nieces and nephews are listening. But that's great, dude. If you had $100 million in a briefcase and you had to pick one thing to invest it in, what would you invest it in?
Real estate.
There you go.
Not even just because I'm talking to you. Like,
what kind of real estate?
Commercial.
Yeah.
Not even just because, and not even warehousing necessarily, but multifamily, I would do that.
You have to pick one sector. So you go with multifamily.
I want as many doors as I can have.
I love industrial, obviously. That's what I said I'd invest my money into. Multifamily is the number two, and I invest in, I have two different multifamily deals that I'm invested in.
Nice.
Anyway, I love that. Like industrial, you have to have it because that's where you distribute things, and that's where you store things and manufacture things. You have to have it.
Correct.
And multifamily, it's houses, and you have to have that.
Correct.
Retail and office space, you don't. They're not necessarily have to haves anymore, in this day and age.
Yep.
So love that idea. And I'm with you there as well. So how would you spend your time if, I think you already answered this with your song, but if money didn't matter and you didn't have to work?
I would spend 100% of my time, man, helping other people make their dreams come true business-wise.
Yeah.
I'd go back in time because I was always me, meaning I remember having two kids and really trying to make it work at C.H. Robinson and all these different things. And I was trying to figure out ways to earn additional income. So I went and worked at Office Max at night and stuff like that. I enjoy mentoring people and helping them become better versions of themselves. Not only just, I start with the mind because that's where it all starts at. But then I think a lot of people aren't introspective enough to like discover what their, you know, superpower is, you know, what's unique to them. And I really enjoy helping people in that way. And but ultimately with the goal of, since I'm goal-oriented, leading them to earn additional income to support their families and make their dreams come true. Because the guys that I work with in overseas and everything, like they're able to buy cars or they're getting married. And that just, you know, me being a part of their growth makes me happy.
I love that. Now, my Tony Robbins coach would say that that's working.
Here's funny. I have a saying that I'm always working and I'm never working.
I say that too.
I'm always available, you know. But my wife doesn't, like, we have a good relationship. Like, she knows me. I don't have a 9 to 5. So if I need to go to a PTA meeting, I can. But like the other night, I got an emergency call. A wire didn't go through. I'm up at 4 a.m, you know.
Yeah.
Talking 24/7 hotline for Wells Fargo to figure out what happened with the wire. I mean, so you're going to work, but it doesn't. Hey, if it's coming from a place of joy and you love what you're doing, it doesn't feel like work. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
I'm just, that's me making beats again, man. Like, I love it.
Yeah.
But then B, you're going to work, you know, 50, 60 hours, whatever, but it won't necessarily be like 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Maybe when the kids are laying down, I may hop back on the computer and jam out again. And I always have music in the background too. I don't know if I mentioned it or not. So right now I listen to a lot of chill jazz or like chill electronic music.
Yeah.
And I zone in on firing out emails, designing. I do a lot of email marketing, whatever. Like, I come out with some of my best ideas at night, believe it or not.
Yeah. Lots of social media too.
Oh, yeah. I stay on there, yeah.
And I say all the time, like, work-life balance to me is, it doesn't mean anything. And I was joking about the Tony Robbins comment because I basically said the same thing to him because that was an exercise I did when I was working with Tony Robbins. And it's like, no, it's all life.
Mm-hmm.
There's no business life and personal life. It's my life. It's how I'm spending my time.
Amen,
and
brother.
I'm going to be spending time doing what I want to do with who I want to do it with. And that's the way I'm living my life. And if I find that that's not happening, then I'm going to have to change that. But it doesn't matter if that's part of my personal life or my business life or my wellness life or whatever, but it's all the same.
Yep.
Because there is no different. All it is you're living and spending your time doing stuff. So
correct.
That hopefully we're getting to a place, you know, where we can just, and I mean, I think everyone's at this place when they're become an adult and they can make decisions on their own, but you can be living that way from day one. You don't have to wait to retire to live some certain way. You don't have to wait to have too much money. I might even rethink that question now because it is kind of silly because I don't think necessarily if I were to make 10 times as much money as I had today or 100x or whatever.
No, you're not stopping.
I'm loving
it's fine.
Life.
Yeah. You're jamming out, bro. Like, you're jamming
you
out
too,
like when
man.
You were playing. Yeah, that's it's the same.
In the flow state.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It brings me joy. It's a part of my life. And I love it. So even if I was worth $100 million, man, I wouldn't stop. I would definitely maybe focus a little more on the coaching side of people independent of my income. But what me getting up every night, because even for example, I don't think that retirement is a man-made construct, first of all. I don't think it exists like in nature anywhere.
It definitely doesn't.
Right? Because to say I'm retiring is to say I'm done being useful. And when would I ever do that? So I don't really believe in the concept. So I don't think I'll ever retire. I may put down this type of work and pick up another type of work, you know, but I can't see myself retiring, man.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
Me neither. Enjoyed it. Where do our listeners find you?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. You can look up Sherman Barnes II on LinkedIn. It'll come up. There's a Sherman Barnes III. I just connected with him out of, you know. And we talk at every place. He's a cool guy in Florida. So Sherman Barnes II on LinkedIn. I'm very active there.
That's not one of your 6 children.
No, it's not. That's funny.
I found you.
So you can find me there and on Twitter as well. Same tag as Sherman Barnes II. And like I said, I have AskTheTransporter.com and then SalesHub247.com if you want to learn more of that.
Love it. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks for having me, man. This is great.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to this episode of Truckin' On. I hope you enjoyed it.
If you did, don't be shy. Please like, share, leave a 5-star review so that we can keep doing what we're doing. Stay safe out there on the road. Keep on trucking. Adios.